Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 82 with this week's special guest, Sean Proffitt.
This week on the podcast, fearing an outbreak of optimism sweeping the nation, Congress decides to not make any deals on the debt ceiling or the government shutdown.
Polls show that most Americans would vote for literally anyone other than their current representatives.
And in positive shutdown news, the first Obama nominee not subject to intense opposition is likely to be approved by the supposedly non-working Senate.
Voters at the Value Voters Summit proved through their straw poll results that their values are mostly non-existent.
And we'll take a trip in the Wayback Machine to the weirdest election in California history.
Plus, Michelle Bachmann states that the end times are here, and if China's hornet situation is any indication, she might be right.
All this and more. This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the internet, by the way, at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah. And we're very excited because we have Sean Proffitt, who's the host of National Progressive Talk Radio, with us today.
Yeah, so welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
We did Sean's show, God, almost a year ago.
I know.
Which is crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Because it was right before the election last year.
It
was fun. So we are excited to have him on ours.
Oh, it was a great show. I was glad you guys came, and I'm glad to be able to return the favor.
Cool.
Excellent. And it's an exciting week to have to be here to join us because
it's like the third week of the government shutdown.
Yes, because the government is still shut down.
This story is sort of like reminding me of when we had to keep continuing to lead with the debt ceiling.
Oh, I know.
Story, and you and I both hated it, but there wasn't anything yet. You had to talk about it.
Well,
sort of like it just kept going on and on.
This is the news that's preventing other news from happening. So
I know.
This is why
right.
We have to keep leading with it.
Yeah, exactly. So the government's still shut down.
Yeah, we still have no. P.S. At least three people this week asked me if the government was still shut down. Like, people, it's happening, it's been going on for so long now that people are just, like, forgetting that it's still going on.
People have stopped caring.
Yeah. It's like, now to the point where it's sort of like, well, my everyday life hasn't changed because the government is shut down and I'm still going to work every day, so obviously this means nothing and I can forget. Which is too bad. That's wrong. That's incorrect, yeah. And it's going to be really wrong when we hit the debt ceiling and then we also can't pay our bills and then, you know, everyone stops getting Social Security checks or whatever's supposed to happen.
Who knows? There's been a lot of dire warnings about
a lot of dire warnings. I've been hearing that there's like that we can sort of skate by for like 2 or 3 days past the debt ceiling actually getting hit, so that it's likely that we will hit the debt ceiling and then in like 3 days Wall Street will just like panic completely and then it will have to end.
Well, there's a Treasury auction on Thursday, and
right.
That's the day that we're supposed to hit the ceiling. And if that auction doesn't happen, I think we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, I mean. At this point, I'm sort of just like, I've never been happier about Wall Street being horribly powerful in a way that's destroying everyone's lives, because I'm hoping they can fix this.
Their panic may fix this,
yeah.
Yeah.
What I have been noticing is that over the course of the week, the tone of all of the news has been like changing at like a really like bipolar kind of crazy pace, where there was an article in the Times about how the House is working on a short-term deal that would have that would have raised the debt ceiling for like six weeks or some
like
fake amount of time.
Would have made everybody's Thanksgiving really super awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But their original article began with House Republicans looking for a way out of a budget standoff they began, planned to vote as early as Thursday. And I was like, God, that's really like stepping out for the Times. Like that's pretty bold for them. By today, that article had been changed to an article that just blamed everyone for nothing happening, basically. It was sort of toned down, but also became, the headline became No Quick Deal, but Offer by GOP on Debt Shifts the Tone.
Oh.
So now, apparently, we're supposed to feel optimistic about the fact that they even thought about raising the debt ceiling for 6 weeks in exchange for some horrible thing that they wanted from us. Because at least they're open to talking about it. We were supposed to think that maybe they weren't even. But it's been sort of slowly falling apart on the House side to the degree that I think just the Senate is now. They're hoping the Senate will do something, because the House has kind of lost all, you know, they were negotiating with the president earlier this week and nothing came of it.
Well, it kind of seems to me like at this point, if they were going to cave, they probably would have caved in the first couple of days.
Yeah.
Now that they've gone this far, they're like, why did they go through all this if they're just going to, like, you know,
exactly.
Agree on what they should have agreed with in the
beginning? Well, and we talked last week about how it's sort of like, they've even been quoted as saying it's like a pride issue for them
right.
at this point.
They don't even need anything. They just need to feel like they got something. They don't know what that is. It needs to seem like it was a good deal so they feel okay about having made the deal. Well, they've sort of gotten them into a position where their craziest supporters are like kind of running the show, and those people want to see something for all their work, for all their work being destructive.
Or lack of work.
Exactly.
What, doorstop, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at this point, the deal, there's no deal between Obama and the House, and there was a bill earlier in the Senate that was being, you know, it's Susan Collins's deal, so it's kind of a moderate Republican deal, and even that fell apart. That was supposed to be our big white hope.
Right.
And it would have like done some things that I still don't get what this whole like medical device tax thing is. I know Brent knows.
Well, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Just because
this has been a talking point in every one of these negotiations.
I think the reason it keeps coming up is because it was being looked at as a possible bone that could be thrown.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're not gonna
and like the Democrats don't care that much about
right,
it.
Right. Right. We could possibly get rid of it and raise the revenue some other way, and then the Tea Party could feel like they got a tax cut out of the deal.
Right.
Right.
And I think they're saying that they're going to get rid of this, and they are going to sort of like replace those funds with something else. But it raises something like $29 billion or something, or a large chunk of money.
Well, like
but it's a 2.3% tax on sales. And I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about this when sort of they were first mentioning this as a possible bone that they were going to throw the Republicans. And the example that he used is, you know, one device is like a hip replacement, and those cost $350 to make, to manufacture. And the manufacturers sell those to the hospitals for like $13,000. And it's right. That $13,000 that they're basically profiting is getting taxed 2.3%. So to a degree, I'm sort of like, I don't know why everybody's so against
this
because it sounds like such a great idea, but maybe I'm just I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they cut their price a little bit.
Exactly.
And it seems like it seems like once you're paying $13,000 for your hip replacement, the tax doesn't really hit you that hard.
Well, you're paying more than that. $20,000. The hospital bills you out even more because they're making a profit on top of that.
Right. Once the cost is so high, though, the tax doesn't really hit you. It's like how you don't feel bad about how when you go and buy a new iPhone, like paying sales tax on your new iPhone isn't as annoying as paying sales tax on your groceries every day because you sort of like, you're already paying a lot of money for
the iPhone. This tax does not affect sales directly to consumers.
Right. It's between the hospitals and the manufacturers, right?
Yeah. So,
it's rolled in.
Yeah. So I understand why Republicans are so angry about this because it's an extra tax and they hate all taxes. But I just don't understand why the Democrats are sort of like, yeah, let's give it to them. But maybe it's like you said, it's just kind of like, well, screw it. Give it to them, and then let's just be on with it.
But it seems like if that was going to work, it would have already worked,
right? Like, and it's such
a
like
whole enchilada. They're not going to be satisfied with something like that,
right? It's sort of like, and if you give them this for now, then it's sort of like, you know, then they want something else later.
Well, they're not trying to negotiate; they're trying to win. Like, there's like negotiating with them doesn't get you closer towards them negotiating with you. It just gets you closer to having policies that they approve of. Like, that's ultimately like they're not trying to like also make sort of like deals with us to kind of reach a middle ground of sorts.
It's really irritating when to keep hearing people say that, you know, oh, both sides.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I mean, at this point, that's like nails on a chalkboard for me, I'm telling you. Whenever I hear anybody say that.
I know. Well, there was that great article or that great op-ed in Al Jazeera that was basically about how like the American media has been like bending over backwards to make it seem like they're fair and balanced and in the middle and, you know, whatever. And because of that, they're having to like justify these absolutely insane negotiating tactics as if they're just sort of like normal everyday negotiating tactics that are fair.
I think it has been sort of like skewing a little better though.
It has been. I think about that Times article that started with the assumption that the Republicans started this problem and are now refusing to finish it. Basically,
right.
Like that was the first time that I'd seen the Times step out on anything like that. And the Times does not like to step out. They're not outsteppers. That's not their deal.
Well, both sides it's such a lazy attitude. It's like if you don't want to learn anything about what's going on, if you haven't taken the time to study this play by play that's been happening, you know, with the Republicans, really, you know, the entire time Obama's been in office, then you can sit there and just kind of say, well, yeah, you know, I think about politics like maybe like once a year, and last time I checked, it seemed like both sides were screwing up. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And they are. But I mean, not necessarily here.
They're not, basically. This is not the time to bring your vague understanding of politics into play. This is like a very specific problem that is very specifically gone horribly wrong. But anyway, this Susan Collins bill, which Joe Manchin is working on it with her, and there's a couple of other sort of, well, I would not normally put these, group these people in as moderates, but I'm having to. Moderate Republicans.
Hey, John McCain is a moderate now.
I know. Well, Joe Manchin is also a moderate Republican. He's a Democrat from West Virginia, but I mean, he's...
Well, no, exactly. He's the only one who I think I would legitimately term moderate in life, but only because I term him to be... He's in the middle of being a Republican and being a moderate Democrat, basically. Like,
Yes, exactly.
In any case, this deal sort of has some other sort of like more vague things where, you know, it'll give the limited sequester funds for various agencies, it'll give them a little more of a chance to kind of like move money around within their own agency and stuff like that. It's a little bit more flexibility for them. And for some reason, like, John McCain like somehow snuck in this thing about fire suppression into the bill, so it like somehow provides more funding for fire suppression, which sounds like, are we putting pork spending in this bill? Like, what are
probably
what are we doing?
Why not, right?
Really?
Like, yeah, like there's
is that,
just, like,
is that fire suppression like as in forest fires or as in like fire extinguishers? Like, what are we talking about?
We don't know. I assume that it has to do with forest fires and that it has to do with being in a desert with lots of state parks in Arizona, which
and climate change
that that none of them agree with. But I mean, that like, is that really what we are going to put in the debt ceiling negotiation bill? Like, John McCain gets some extra pork spending out of that? That's crazy. We can lose Obamacare. That's fine, as long as Arizona has fire suppression funds. But so anyway. On Saturday, the Democrats rejected this bill in the Senate anyway and decided that they were going to have talks between Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell. And then those fell apart.
Right.
And then on Sunday, Mary Landrieu and Bob Corker decided that maybe this bill was okay. But so far, no one really knows what's going to happen because the bill is supposedly dead, but people are still talking about it. Mitch McConnell and John McCain – I mean, Mitch, not John McCain. Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid – hate each other and continue to.
There was a quote from Politico asked Harry Reid if he felt like he was going to be able to get a deal with Mitch McConnell done.
He said no.
One word. In a word, no.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I'm actually really impressed with the Democrats and with the president for just
standing their ground. They
just
never do that.
They just, here we are. Okay, yeah. This is it. We said, this is what we said, and this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And this is maybe the first time that I can remember this happening in recent years.
Yeah. But I think that also speaks to sort of like how ridiculous this is too, I think.
Yeah, like, you know, if you can't get the Democrats to compromise you, who can you get? there's no one else.
Yeah. As we've stated, they're the party of compromise.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of what they do.
Yeah, as I said, I think I posted something on Facebook earlier this week that was about how you can just basically take whatever Ted Cruz says and like just assume the exact opposite is true, because he was I posted an article about how the Affordable Care Act is actually going to be a boon to small business instead of a total, you know, destroyer of small business, as Ted Cruz would have you believe. But basically, this is the same deal. Like, he said that the Democrats were not willing to compromise. They are the party of compromise.
Yeah.
Everything that he says, you can assume the opposite is true.
Obamacare is a compromise. Huge compromise.
Yes, I know. Which
we
is so funny
about that all the time.
They're holding, you know, the government hostage over
their own
like,
policy that was like endorsed by Newt Gingrich and was like a part of their platform for like the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
But like somehow,
right?
You know, God forbid.
The fact that there's no public option in that is like proof of it being a compromise in the first place. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's but so in any case, Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid are expected to continue talking. They're gonna likely talk about Mitch McConnell. The headline on HuffPo right now is about how Mitch McConnell's not moving. So,
well,
Mitch
McConnell is sort of in a tough place. I don't feel bad for him personally because I do not like him, but he is running for re-election in 2014 and he has a Tea Party crazy running against him in the primaries. And the Democrat is sort of like a more formidable Democrat than sometimes you would get in a Kentucky Senate race. So he sort of is in the middle of just probably not having any clue what he's supposed to do. I mean, he doesn't normally anyway, I don't think. But
no. He's getting more curmudgeonly with age. Talks between Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell must just be hilarious. Because the two of them are, like, so doddering.
I know.
And, like, so sort of, like, grumpy.
They both talk really slow,
too. It must be the most boring talks in history. I can't even imagine. Like, there must be, like, bathroom breaks constantly. Like, a lot must be going on that is keeping the talks from moving ahead.
Yeah.
That is not just the fact that they can't agree on anything.
Yeah.
They're just grumping at each other.
Yeah.
Grumping is a word that, it's like crumping. Something old people do. But you may not be surprised to find that because of all of these shenanigans, like, basically everyone's willing to just, like, throw out the entire government and start again. That's, polls this week have been hilarious.
Which, yeah. You know, I mean, I can understand why people are that cynical, but it's always the wrong answer.
It's never,
it totally is.
You can't.
Well, and whenever you sort of, like, this is always the case. Like, whenever you poll things like this, you get results like this. But
right.
Whenever you poll sort of, like, your congressperson versus the person who they are potentially running against, like, it's always either closer or the incumbent wins. So, like,
These
are a little skewed, but it's the most, it's the craziest sort of, like,
gap between,
I mean, to be as low as 25% is saying something. You're absolutely right, though. I mean, it's sort of...
Well, and obviously, like, this is not going to carry over into the next election cycle in 1 year from
now. No, we're not actually going to get rid of, like, 75% of our Congress people.
Right.
Well, and it points out the whole idea that, you know, people think somehow that being in public office is something that doesn't require training or experience or connections or anything that you build up when you're there for a period of time. And, I mean, I hate this whole idea. We want to get citizen legislators in there.
Yeah, you know, it's like, doesn't work that way.
No.
Well, and this whole situation is proof because the Tea Party are a bunch of rookies that came in recently that don't really understand the legislative process. They don't really have an agenda, so they're able to hold everything up and not really worry about not pushing forward an agenda that makes any sense and is actually possible. Their agenda is just to sort of, like, be destructive and, like, end the government somehow, which is an easier agenda to enact than trying to bring health care to people and, like, making sure that, you know, the income gap doesn't grow. Like, it's easier than having plans, and it allows them to not be – They don't need to negotiate because it's fine if nothing, you know, it's fine if they just push for craziness and nothing happens, and it's fine if crazy happens, and it's just not fine if good things happen.
Right. Like, well, and I mean, their sort of whole end game with this was just to shut down the government. And I think, like,
success. So,
and they never had plans post that.
They don't
and
need
all
to.
All of the sort of, like, thinking Republicans sort of said that. And
they
were on the record saying that. Like, this is not – what do we do after we shut down the government? And the thing is that the Tea Party didn't care.
Exactly. Yeah.
They shut it down, and now it's shut down, and then
they're sort of
done.
Like, well, now we don't have
one,
so that's
hook.
Good. Yeah. We'll just lay back and continue to be paid personally while everyone in America suffers.
Well, this takes me all the way back to 2010 when – I don't know if you guys talked about that story where there was – I forget. It was some southern state, of course, where they had a – fee-for-service fire department.
Yes.
And somebody had not paid their bill, and they just let their house burn down, you know?
Yeah.
Over $75 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know?
That's classic.
And that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the polling, I think, as thinking Republicans, as Brent recently termed them in the last minute.
I didn't say there were a lot of them.
No, and I would argue
that
thinking is a relative
group.
Term in this context.
Right.
But, thinking Republicans are, I think, very afraid because the GOP polling numbers are just, like, dumpster. Like,
they are.
Nobody is happy with the GOP right now. Their approval rating is at 24%, according to a new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. And there was an AP poll that came out recently that only, like, 5% of people approve of Congress. Like, Congress's approval rating is almost the margin of error of the poll in the first place.
Yeah.
Which,
what do they say, like cockroaches and hemorrhoids?
Oh yeah. Right, yeah. There was
totally.
There was a surprisingly large and diverse number of horrible things that have higher approval ratings than Congress.
Yeah.
So this is sort of a bad sign for any Republican that's not in the Tea Party and has plans beyond just being totally destructive, even if those plans are slightly destructive.
But the fact that their polling is so bad. I mean, you know, we're coming up on an election in 2014 that is not that far away, even though it's over a year away. But, I mean, there's no way that the Republicans, the way that they've gerrymandered all of their seats, should be losing the House of Representatives. If they lose, it will be – I mean, a lot can happen between now and then. But, like, there's no reason for them to lose the House. I mean, I would love it if they did.
Yeah.
But they have just, you know, they've gerrymandered everything to within an inch of its life. I mean, they can't, there's, you see
right.
some of these
There's not a lot of roots
districts.
To losing for them.
No.
And they're finding them. They're slowly
right.
finding this few
yeah.
roots
Well, they're
to
good
losing.
At doing that. They've been doing it the last few election cycles.
That's true.
Thankfully. I mean, they should also have the Senate right now, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Well, the other thing that the Tea Party is doing is they're very big on this whole idea of primarying people.
Yes.
Getting a
which
radical
is
opponent,
a totally,
which is
like, eat your own.
For the Democrats to win.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's happening. My parents live in a district in upstate New York that has a moderate Republican who is not one of the Republicans who came out and said that he was not in favor of the government shutting down and has been sort of, like, kind of confused about what he's supposed to be doing. He's losing in a poll to an unnamed Democrat at the moment. He's, I think, very likely going to lose his seat because he's not able to come out. You know, it's not a conservative enough district for him to come out and say that he's in support of, like, Tea Party style policies. And there are Tea Partiers there who would run someone against him if, you know, yeah. if they needed to. And it's a district that is like just on the edge of Republican
right.
that should be a safe district because.
But it's Kirsten Gillibrand's old seat, so a Democrat can win it.
No, exactly. You know,
but I think there's a lot of seats out there that
there's seats out there that well, and you know, this is a district that has been gerrymandered, you know, so that it's slightly more. There's just like no reason that a Democrat should be able to win that district in a world in which Republicans make like some sense, and somehow they're managing to find those districts and rip the Republicanism right out of them.
Yeah,
like a real skillful disease that keeps on growing. But this is also. Been a big week for, or in the last 2 weeks have also, I guess, been doing this, but we haven't really talked about it, speculating as to what the president's options are in this circumstance if he wants to avoid the debt ceiling, if he wants to avoid negotiating on the debt ceiling and just sort of raise it unilaterally. And so there's been a lot of talk about what the court fallout would be for that and what his options are really for doing
well,
that.
Yeah.
One of the things that he has to do is, I mean, he's going to break one law or another. He's either going to break the
yeah.
debt ceiling or he's going to not pay legally mandated bills
right.
that have been passed by
exactly.
Congress. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
he's between a rock and a hard
soon.
Place.
He's going to do it soon because
that's this week.
You have to let people know that you're having a Treasury auction. You can't just like, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly.
yeah.
yeah. There was an interesting article, though, in the New Republic that sort of speculated as to how the Supreme Court would vote if he did just sort of unilaterally raise the debt ceiling and or unilaterally choose to pay bills that were not, you know, that weren't really affordable under in a
right.
world in which we don't raise the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
And they thought that actually there's a chance that, and I don't see this necessarily happening in reality, but there's if the Supreme Court justices were to vote on their actual principles as opposed to their just sort of politicized positions that they currently have, that there's a good chance because there's a lot of very like pro-executive power conservatives on the court right now that a vote, like a 7-2 vote in favor of him would actually be a possibility.
Interesting.
I don't know that that's actually possible just because this is such a highly politicized court and there's like no way. Like, first of all, I don't understand how it got this politicized because it's not like the Supreme Court justices are running for re-election. Like, that's the whole point of them is that they don't have to be answering to these conservative interests. And somehow we've managed to like destroy that situation to a degree that like they're like voting on whether or not we should have health care and, you know, who should be president and things like that.
But the thing is that, you know, you had Roberts
right.
affirming health care. You had.
Yeah, they've been at least a little bit hesitant about making big political decisions in sort of a country changing kind of way.
And I have a theory also that they can't be happy at this point. They made a decision that the Affordable Care Act was constitutional. And now, you know, if they got another case being thrown in their lap that was essentially asking them to reconsider that decision, which is what this
right,
whole budget
exactly.
fight is about, then, you know,
right, then
I would just be like slapping them down
mm-hmm.
if I was on that court. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the New Republic was sort of talking about it in the context of whether or not Obama should take the risk of doing of just sort of like unilaterally doing something. And they were sort of like, he should, because, you know, there's this chance that they'll vote along politicized lines, but that's a disaster
well,
for them.
My question, how does it get to
well, they thought
them?
They probably wouldn't take the case.
Right, that's what I just, I'm curious as to how it ends up being heard by them. I mean, if
there's a few things that, the Congress people that would want to sue over this, like, don't have the legal standing to do that. So they wouldn't be able to. There's apparently a legal precedent that would prevent, like, individuals from suing over this. Hmm. So there's not a lot of options for, like, figuring out who could even sue in this situation.
It seems like by the time that they would want to have heard it, it seems like something would have been figured out by that point, too. Yeah. So it's almost like they would have to retroactively be going to figure it out, right?
Are we
it's done.
Are we thinking that, like...
We paid the bills. We're not going to unpay the bills.
Right. You can't uncook a chicken.
No, nope, that's right.
That's my folksy saying that I made up, that I've been trying to figure out how to work into everyday life.
Yeah.
I've been doing a good job, though, recently.
Yeah, you have.
But can you guys imagine how, like, absolutely insane the Tea Party would get if Obama went ahead and told the Treasury to...
Oh my God. I want to see it. It would be epic. It would be absolutely epic.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for something to happen that really just, like, outs them as being enough, like, childish enough that people are like, okay, let's stop. Like, this is too crazy.
This hasn't been it. The shutdown hasn't been it.
Right. I know. Well,
they haven't started shooting yet.
Oh, God.
I thought the shutdown would be it. I feel like because the shutdown happened in this sort of contained environment, and it's, like, hard to figure out if you don't, like, live in a national park, then, like, it's hard to sort of figure out how to feel about this if without it sort of, like, having time to have the ripple effects that will sort of come down on you. Well, it's like you were saying, like, your dad runs a tour company.
Right.
Now, if you were your dad's neighbor and didn't run a tour company but lived next door to a guy who ran a tour company in a community that depends on a national park for a lot of tourist business,
right,
then at
some
point, it takes a while for you to know to know what's going on. Whereas if you are – and if you are someone who knows what's going on, then you're probably informed enough to know that you shouldn't be feeling good about what the Tea Party is doing right now.
Right.
So I think that there's sort of like there's the ripple effects are going to take time, and maybe that's why this sort of childish activity that's going on in Congress is not really, like, registering with enough people to make it so that everyone is just sort of unilaterally like, no.
Yeah.
But these poll numbers sort of make it look like we're getting
maybe
there.
They are, yeah.
I mean...
Well, what's been cracking me up is this whole nonsense about the monuments and how...
Oh, my God. And we're going to have... We have some great stories about that later.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to piecemeal open the monuments like
bonkers.
It really matters. Like, you know, you care more about, you know, having a rally somewhere than you do about the millions, literally millions of people who are being deprived of food, shelter, jobs.
Totally.
Everything that you can think of that the government... You know, the base in Antarctica, their whole year worth of research is going to be ruined.
Well, and even, like, these Congress people's own staff aren't being paid right now. Like, I know that they're planning to retroactively pay them or whatever, but, like I have members who, I mean, members, I have friends who work for members of the House and Senate who are just currently, like, showing up to work every day and not getting paid. And, like, that's about as one-on-one as you can get with the ripple effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, if your entire staff isn't being paid and, like, somehow... That's not been enough pressure on anyone to... Well, these are the same people that are trying to pass a law that, like, basically takes away their staff's health care and pensions.
Yes,
so
true. Yeah.
These are not people to be trusted. Meanwhile, Rand Paul thinks that all of this is just a big nothing anyway, and Obama's just out there trying to scare us with dire warnings of economic emergencies, but that we should just all calm down. Just not worry about it.
Thanks, Rand.
Yeah, he's super helpful. He's trying to accuse the Senate Democrats of getting greedy currently by trying to pass a clean bill, which is hilarious for a lot of reasons. But he's also he's trying to call the president irresponsible in as many ways as he can to somehow, like, do some blame shifting that seems like it's possibly not going to work, and he should know that.
Yeah, well, he's saying that he should be soothing the markets and, like, making it seem like this isn't going to happen,
like,
but it's sort of like...
It's not in his control.
And
he can't do anything about it personally unless he does some, you know, like what we were just discussing and just sort of unilaterally makes a decision. Like, it's not his job to just, like, sit and lie to everyone about what's going on.
Well, and that brings up, I was listening on C-SPAN last week, and there was the hearing in front of the Senate Finance Committee, and they had Treasury Secretary Jack Lew up there, and they were asking him, like, well, can't you pay some bills and not others? And, well, what actually happens here? I mean, the government isn't really running out of money. And he's, like, going, yes, we actually are, and there's no way to prioritize bills, and you guys better fix this soon because you don't want the holy hell that's going to be, I mean, he didn't say that, but, you know, basically he was implying, you know, you don't want the holy hell that's going to be unleashed if we go over this threat.
They don't even get it.
No, well, they're living in a world in which the facts are just...
I mean,
different.
I don't get it either, but they should get it.
Yeah.
I mean...
Right. We don't have to get it.
Oh, nope.
Currently, we haven't been elected to serve in Congress.
To get it.
Yeah, to get it.
Yeah.
We're not elected get-it-ers.
Yeah. Nope.
No. Part of what's making it so hard, though, is that, like, no one in Congress can just, like, suggest a bill that would fix this because...
Oh, yeah. Have you seen this clip?
Yeah, you. I think you told us about this clip, didn't you? Or did you?
Yeah, no, that's the one, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, Chris Van Hollen sort of like in this like back and forth with whoever the pro tem of the House is at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, Jason Chaffetz.
I mean, explain it.
Well, this is the shocking thing. Okay, so we have enough votes. Everybody has known. It's
right.
been on CNN. It's been everywhere. There are enough votes of sane Republicans who will join with Democrats to reopen the government, and because of some combination of House rules, no one can bring this bill to the floor. Boehner can, but he won't. And apparently there was a way where other members of the House could petition, sign a petition to bring this bill.
Oh, right.
Now,
I think we talked about
now
that.
The rules have been changed, and only Eric Cantor
is the only other person that can bring
The bill to the floor. So,
and this just happened recently, right? Didn't this sort of like change
yeah, like
procedures
on the first
or
something?
Like October 1st. Like they clearly have been planning this whole thing. There's no way.
Oh, yeah.
These rules, you know, it's like, the filibuster was bad enough that now we've got something similar in the House where the majority has to even introduce a bill. It's just...
Right.
That's, I think, a stupid thing for them to even be doing because someone like Boehner isn't really getting any points out of holding this whole thing up any longer than he's, you know, any longer. And he sort of needs an out where he can be like, well, they went over my head and there's nothing I can do. And sorry about it, guys. I tried everything I could.
Just personally, I think it would probably... be in his
benefit, yeah, to his favor to bring it up. Yeah, no, absolutely. But even if he's not going to, it would be to his benefit if it came up somehow and he could be like, well, I didn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I know
if they
got around me. Yeah,
yeah, he needs a face-saving compromise to come up because otherwise, like, what's he gonna, like, he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's got these crazies on one side that he's terrified of because they're going to primary him, basically. And then he's got these angry people on the other side that are just sort of, like, confused about why he can't just act like a normal human. And he sort of doesn't have the political will to, like, be able to overcome these 40 angry people that are holding everything up, basically.
Yeah.
And it would just be easier if someone could be like, okay, we're going over your head. Like,
right.
Just sit tight and pretend you're sad. Shed a tear if you need to, and we'll just,
yeah,
you know, move on with our lives.
Well, I mean, what I don't understand is that we're talking about a 2-year term here, okay? And is it really worth taking the country over this cliff to get another 2-year term in the House of Representatives for what? You know, after we've lost our credit, after we can't pay our bills, after we're the laughingstock of the world, and we've, you know, we're like on our way to being a third world
country.
Maybe
it is if you're someone who's just like so moved by their own story of success
know,
that being there reminds you every day of how wonderful you are.
Yeah, but at a certain point, if you're John Boehner, you're just sort of like, God, I don't want to be the Speaker anymore.
Well, the thing is, he likes being Speaker. That's what's so weird about this whole situation is if I were in his position, I would be like, somebody
Get
else
me
take
out
over.
Of this.
I am done. You guys are crazy. I would be like trying to approach someone who is in a safe seat. Like I've been saying, get someone like Peter King in there. He's crazy as a bed bug. So, you know, I'm sure that everyone could sort of like find a way to get behind him, but he's not going to lose a seat to a Tea Partier. He doesn't have a reason to be scared of
them. He doesn't have to take their shit.
He doesn't have to take their shit. And he could just be like, shut up. Like,
like
that's all that needs to be said is like, it's like a bunch of like whiny children or like in the corner. It's like freshman people who have no business even bringing legislation to the floor at this point.
Like, well, they're not because
don't care about laws. Yeah. But I mean, it's like having whiny children in the back of the room. It's like backbenchers who are sitting there just sort of like making a mess for everyone. Like an adult needs to come in and be like, okay, your like weak babysitter is gone now. I'm here. Like, shut up. But obviously that's not going to happen because Boehner loves his job so much. He gets a fancy office out of it. And I think it has a lot to do with his fancy office and probably what I assume is a very fancy bathroom in his fancy office. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this because I accidentally got to like walk into a member's bathroom in the Senate at one point. And
was this when you were...
I was touring the Senate and they showed us into a member... Like, we
you
didn't get to like go in.
Accidentally wander into
well,
a member
I was like,
bathroom?
I opened a door or something. Like, somebody opened the door and they were like, oh no, we can't go in there or something. There was something where I just like saw briefly inside. And I was like, this is like the fanciest bathroom I've ever seen in my entire life. So I feel
you don't
like
want to give that up.
You don't want to give that up. No, he probably has his own really fancy bathroom in there. Yeah. He gets an office that's like at the Capitol. He doesn't have to take that. You know, he doesn't have to do the walk. It's a fancy job.
The people's representatives can't use public restrooms.
No, it's
right,
that would be horribly embarrassing.
Talk. Yeah.
They work for us so that they can get a fancy bathroom that we're not allowed into.
Yeah.
But also, you also brought an article with you that was about, that was an op-ed piece that was about how this bears a lot of resemblance to, like, an actual coup d'etat.
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, there's no question. This situation is, I mean, they lost an election. They lost in the Supreme Court. They only won the House by redistricting.
Right.
And now they're essentially saying that they're not going to accept the results. And
right.
every party... That's what America is based on, essentially, is when you lose, you take your ball and go home, you know,
yeah.
and you come back and play next time. And it's like, these guys aren't doing that, and they're changing the basic contract that we have, you know, with each other as a democracy.
And they actually got less House votes. I mean, they redistricted, so they are in control of the House, but just as a nation, Democrats got more votes for the House
right.
of Representatives.
Yeah,
I mean, I know that's not obviously how we elect people, but I mean, just...
No, but
so
I
they
mean,
really... On a technicality, also lost the House.
Right. There are fewer people voting for them than there are voting for Democrats
right
now. It blows my mind that anyone ever gives in to that kind of gerrymandering nonsense, because when they redistrict, I'm always like, doesn't matter what year, whatever year it is, there are, like, voters in urban districts get redistricted into bigger districts than other people, and because of that, they end up with fewer votes, and because of that, you know, like, we end up in these presidential elections where, like, Democrats have clear victories in the popular votes, and no one else... You know, and now we have that happening in the House, which is blowing my mind.
Well,
and the
sort of potentially scary thing about this is that they have all these gerrymandered districts, and you're starting to see a lot of bills, not necessarily recently, but just within the last couple years anyway, about how all of these sort of Republican states now want to allot their Electoral College votes by how these districts are voting, which are, you know, gerrymandered districts. So that's sort of potentially terrifying as well. I mean,
we have a theory about
that.
Are they
going to put that through? I mean, is that?
Maine does it. I mean, a few.
Nebraska does it.
There are a few states that do it. And state. Usually that's a pretty hard fight to get through a state legislature.
But there have been a few states who've been talking about it. I think we talked about Pennsylvania talking about doing it recently.
Yeah. States that have like really vocal conservative minorities that are like swing states that could really like. Pull out some extra punches if they were able to allot their votes that way, because the rural districts have so many fewer people and get so much more representation than the urban districts do, which is alarming and terrifying. But Brent and I also have been talking a lot about how we think that Arizona is about to turn blue and that Texas could be in play at some point. So we're sort of excited about that.
Right, and what we're looking at here, a lot of people aren't realizing how much it has to do with what's going on, is this huge demographic shift that's going on in the country.
Yeah.
And it's not just what the Republicans are doing to alienate everybody, which is happening, but
right.
you know, there's also this huge demographic shift going on. And, you know, California's already a majority-minority state. And the country, I think, is it like 2017, possibly, 2020?
I'm not sure if that sounds right. Yeah.
The country is going to flip to being a majority-minority. Like, whites will be a minority. And that's, you know... A huge deal for...
That's certainly not the year that you want to be the party of rich white men.
No, but I mean, we've also, you know, talked a lot about the fact... I mean, I think that if the Republicans would choose to deal with immigration, I think that they would... I mean, because at least on a lot of social issues, I mean, there's no reason why, you know, the Latinos would not be voting with Republicans.
Yeah.
But it's just that they are sort of choosing now to be racist.
Right.
So, I mean...
Very hard for them not to be racist.
If there's one thing the party was sort of founded on that they can really, like, harken back to, that's, like, too much in a part of their, like, sort of history as a party. Like, I know that this is the party that also freed the slaves, so you have to wonder how they ended up at this point. But this is a party that was holding, like, 24-hour filibusters to make sure that, you know, civil rights bills didn't pass, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is a party that... that kind of earns its credibility on the basis of being racist in the first place. So, like, this is just more – this is a problematic issue for them, because they can't really abandon that, because that's sort of, like, one of the most important basic elements of their rule in the first place.
Sure.
And also, they're getting so much money out of hating the president for vaguely racist reasons that they probably just, like, don't want the good times to end for them.
Yeah.
It's like they've found a lot of, like, additional hate with this presidency that they hadn't found before. Like, they had – before this, they had people that, like, didn't want to pay taxes and, like, didn't – you know, and were sort of, like, vaguely racist because they didn't want to pay for, like, welfare programs and things like that. But, like, they really found, like, deeper wells of hate with this presidency, because everyone is – I mean, we're going to talk in a little bit about – like Joe the Plumber's thoughts on 2016. But there's like this sort of element of American society that is mostly just angry for vaguely racist reasons that they can't really like identify.
And wouldn't admit
and
to.
And wouldn't admit to in the first place. And this has been a huge boon for something, and this is how something like the Tea Party kind of like takes off in the first place, is, you know, there are these sort of like additional things that are kind of scaring people about their way of life that are not founded on anything. But I think it's, you know, you can legitimately like understand why people who live in like all white towns and isolated places worry about their way of life changing when changes happen nationally, because they live in these such isolated communities, and like they've somehow managed to grasp that, and that's at its core a racist sentiment. So
it is in the America that they're fantasizing about is, you know, number one, never really existed.
Right. Didn't exist.
Number two, is never going to exist again.
Right. If it did, it's gone.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of it's also about inequality, and that's something I know you guys have talked about a lot in the past, but, you know, something that you can't ignore how much of the current situation is about really inequality.
Yeah.
And the amazing amount of wealth that's been injected into the political process, because these people have the money to spend. The 1% and the 0.1% have the money to spend, and why wouldn't they spend it to improve their situation?
Yeah. In positive shutdown news, we're about to have a new Fed chief who's not going to be subject to some sort of extensive process in which everyone tries to like throw mud at her and then makes her drop out of the running.
Yeah.
I don't even like know that I care much about Janet Yellen. I just feel like happy that one of Obama's appointments is not being like immediately shut down by the right for like suspect. Like, there are reasons the left wanted to shut down Larry Summers, and and a lot of his appointees have been sort of like suspiciously conservative, and I get that. But they aren't getting shut down by the left. They're getting shut down by the right, and it's annoying because that is his prerogative as president to appoint people, even if he's making stupid choices.
And she is the first woman. So
she's the first female Fed chief. She's the first Democrat to take the job in like 25 years, because, you know.
Right, we've had Greenspan and Bernanke.
Greenspan and Bernanke were both Republicans, and they were, I mean, Clinton appointed Greenspan, so. Well, he loved to appoint a Republican to something financial. That was one of his big his favorite things to do. But it seems like the Senate, in all of their glory,
discontent,
is just sort of like not worried too much about this, because, you know, unlike Summers, she has a full support of the Democratic caucus, which was part of the problem, was that he didn't.
Right.
But, you know, there's a few Republicans, like Bob Corker was like talking up some nonsense about her being too dovish on financial regulation or whatever. And like,
screw off,
Bob Corker. They have the votes. So, so this is a sign that something is happening.
Right. Do you have any thoughts on Janet Yellen or the Fed?
Well, I think it's positive. I mean, she's not tied as heavily to Wall Street.
Right.
So, you know, that's always good. But, you know, again, if they, you know, screw the pooch, what good is it going to be to run the Fed if we don't have
you know, a Fed
credibility?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can't pay our bills.
Yeah.
Right.
So I kind of feel like all of this stuff, they shouldn't be talking about anything else.
No.
Except
I know.
The debt ceiling raise and the government open, and the fact that they're not is so beyond irresponsible. I mean, I actually feel like this is the worst crisis our nation has been in my lifetime. I can't think of anything else.
I think that I would tend to. I was surprised to hear that this was even that anyone was talking about Fed chief anythings while this was going on. I was surprised that it was Obama's press conference. Like, it's like he was like, "Well, I have nothing to do on Wednesday, so I'll just, you know, do like you have everything to do on Wednesday because you've got to fix, you've got to figure out how to open the government. You're busy on Wednesday." But I sort of feel like it's probably a good sign, at least, that we are seeing someone running the Fed who is slightly less conservative than what we've been seeing. I think that is a sign that maybe he should be going with slightly more left-wing choices for these things, because at least then he can get his own caucus on board. He's been having a lot of problems doing that. But maybe he could be doing that while the government's open.
Yeah.
I'd like Elizabeth Warren, but, you know.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
I want her to be
do
everything.
Yeah.
All positions of government done by Elizabeth
President
Warren.
Warren.
Yes, exactly.
Well, speaking of, we're excited to talk to you about this, because we talked to you, obviously, about the 2012 election. And, I mean, That was only a year ago, so it's ridiculous to talk about, but we love to talk about it. Everybody loves to talk about it. I was reading some story the other day about how there's been more news coverage about 2016 at this time, which is like, you know, 3 years before the election, than at any other time, like
really?
This time prior to any other election. Basically.
I'm not surprised because I feel like I've been hearing more talk than I've ever could have imagined hearing yeah. 1 year after a presidential
election. It's like it
election.
Started immediately after the
it's
last
like all
election,
we talk about.
And you would have thought that maybe it would have died down because it just was sort of like time to talk about elections, but it just has been ongoing.
Non-stop.
So, and I don't know if you've been following, but we sort of have like a blind hatred for Hillary Clinton. Not really. It's
not
it's founded.
It's not personal hatred.
No.
I understand why the left doesn't like Hillary because of her, you know, she's tied up in a lot of corporate things. And she might approve Keystone if she was in charge. And there's a lot of things that, you know, but she is like the most popular woman in the world right
well,
now.
Well, this is
so.
Where we
totally.
Actually take issue with that claim. And we're excited because this week there was an article in The Nation that agreed with us, which The Nation has been sort of on the Hillary's inevitable boat. Brent and I have been talking a lot about just what being inevitable at this stage means.
Yeah.
And we are sort of like not of the mind that she really does have the sort of political sway to pull this off the way that everyone seems to think, which is why we've been talking about it so much, because it's not really the claims that she's too conservative that bother us. We think she's too conservative for the general election, in terms of like getting progressive votes, you know, and in terms of kind of activating her base. But we also don't think that she sort of like has the kind of like widespread support that everyone seems to find with inevitable candidates. And this is, you know, we were following the New York City mayoral race really closely because we thought it was a good parallel to that. Christine Quinn, who was my representative growing up, my parents live in her district still, and she was sort of the Hillary Clinton of that race. She was considered this inevitable. She was sort of like steamrolling her way through the election.
And she's no Hillary Clinton.
She's
but
we're talking about a local election, and in terms of local elections, she was an institution. She was the person, the single person that was able to grant Bloomberg a third term. She did it because she, you know, for the sort of like support that his machine would give her. And she was the Speaker of the City Council. She's sort of an institution in New York. And she somehow, in campaigning on her own inevitableness, lost everyone's. So, like, everyone
right.
was sort of
got
over
blown
it.
Out.
Got blown out. And it was because she was doing things that people didn't. It was because of her policies, ultimately. And I think that Hillary would almost be the same thing, where, you know, when you really start dissecting, like, what it is that progressives don't like about her, it's a lot of things that that Democrats in general don't really want to see. And she...
They don't like the same things about President Obama. I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean...
True.
No, that's true.
He's given away all sorts
of course.
Preferences to oil companies, you know, that
but
the healthcare law even was a giveaway. Mm. So, you know, I just think that they're coming from the same... The Clintons and Obama are very much in the same centrist, you know, tradition. And it seems like, you know, that wouldn't change with her, I don't think.
I think that the difference with her is that she comes out of a machine, whereas Obama came out of left field. He came out of nowhere. You
right.
know, like,
I think their policies are
absolutely similar. I think the issue that we've been talking about a lot, at least, is
right.
the machine, is that the machine doesn't really, you know, garner the kind of support that it would have. Maybe the
yeah.
first... And actually, Brent and I went and saw Bill Ayer speak recently, and he commented on this because he was... talking about when his name came up in the 2008 election cycle, and it was during the primary between Barack and Hillary, and he had, you know, he's sort of vaguely part of the Democratic kind of community in Chicago, even though he's not really, I don't think he would really consider himself
a Democrat. Called himself not a Democrat.
Yeah,
so,
he's sort of like part of that community,
right.
and he said a lot of the people were saying the same things in that election that we're hearing now, like verbatim. Like, he was like, my friends were saying that she's the inevitable choice, that, you know, there's no one who can match her in terms of like authority or in terms of popularity. And like, it was the same lines that we've been hearing right now, which I thought was really interesting, because it so echoed what we're hearing now that I was sort of like, oh, can you be inevitable for this many years? Like, how many chances at being inevitable do you get?
Yeah.
But
you
do. Anyway.
You think she's going to run?
Do you think
right?
she's?
I think she's going to run. And if she doesn't run, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None. I mean, I
we don't either.
I mean, there are other.
Biden is the most like likely heir, sort of. You know.
Right.
But I just don't see him being competitive.
Right.
I don't. I mean, he's just. I don't know. I mean.
Right. I mean, there's other people who I think are sort of like putting their toe in the water. I mean, there's, yeah, like Martin O'Malley, and there's like other sort of like random people, yeah, who are just sort of like, you know, not that exciting necessarily, yeah. But I mean,
I mean, that's, yeah, the, I, there's like sort of a vacuum, but there was a vacuum at this time in 2003 or whatever.
Yeah,
not 2003, nobody, 2005, or, you know, like, there, no one knew that Barack, yeah, Obama was going to be like riding in out of left field to, yeah, kind, yeah, of,
true,
I would save the day in air quotes.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we got,
remember Joe the plumber?
Yeah.
Well, he has some thoughts on 2016.
He's had so many thoughts.
Oh, God.
That,
I think,
guy,
yeah,
is full of plagiarized thoughts, left, right, and center, because these were all taken off of some other website, and he plagiarized them word for word, and it's just like a racist tirade,
yeah,
basically.
I can't imagine why anybody, I mean, paid any attention to him. Was he considered some bellwether for blue-collar, middle America?
I don't,
whatever,
know. I mean, he ran for Congress, and he, yeah, lost, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he was...
I'm worried, though, that his continued relevance suggests that Sarah Palin is secretly a genius. Because...
She might be. We're related.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she's part of the Proud Thornburg line.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We come from...
Proud stock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Distant relatives. I'm sorry.
But, I mean, it's basically all about how what America needs is, like, a white male president.
A white Republican president.
Yeah. So that's... And then, but then he also went on, like a whole other tirade where he managed to somehow highlight what's terrible about every minority group in his opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he hit Mexicans. He hit, I mean, he really just, he spared
you know, no one.
No.
Yeah. And so at least we have his input.
Yes. A white Republican. Anyone.
Any just, white Republican.
Right.
If you're white and Republican and male.
Yes.
Because women obviously can't run for president. That's
no.
crazy.
They might be in for 30 years of lost presidential elections.
If they are thinking this way, you would imagine they'd have to be, right?
Yeah. Like, this isn't going to win you a presidential election.
No. No, if if there's one thing that I think that they were doing right several years ago and somehow managed to always screw up, is they would come up with these, like, token candidates, you know, the sort of, like, Bobby Jindal-style candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have them deliver the opposition to the State of the Union, and that person would mess up, and then we would all learn that they were an idiot, and we couldn't trust them anymore.
Yeah.
But for a long time, they were having somebody who I thought could have maybe brought the party into the 21st century a little bit, just by virtue of being alive. Mm-hmm. They weren't even people that had good ideas. They were just,
right,
people that were alive and not white men.
Somewhat telegenic, like,
right,
Marco Rubio.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But, like, somehow every single one of those people has somehow destroyed their presidential ambitions,
well,
like, off the bat. Because they can't deliver a speech to save their lives.
Dry mouth can really kill a political career, apparently.
Yeah. And I think that the person who's going to be next on the chopping block is our own Ted Cruz.
Oh, probably. I don't know. Well, yeah. Maybe.
He's going to do something stupid.
Yeah.
He's already shameless. He's already done everything possible.
Anything
stupid.
Stupid.
I know. He
it takes, like, a small moment. It's not these, like, big grand gestures. Because think about, like, you know, Rand Paul had never met a filibuster he didn't like. And has, like, gone, you know, he's somebody that people talk about a lot as a potential contender. And he's full of crazy crackpot ideas. He has more quotes on the record of, like, complete insanity than, like, any other person on the planet. But, like, he hasn't done anything silly like get his water during his rebuttal speech that has, like, been enough, sort of apolitical enough to just make him look stupid. Like, if you're not paying attention to Rand Paul, then you probably don't realize that his constant filibustering is just tiresome and stupid. But, like... If you,
I don't know why they're not talking about the catheters. I mean, that's like,
well,
you know.
Fair enough. But I feel like Ted Cruz is sort of in for some sort of moment, like just the moment that we're like, oh, wait a minute, this
yeah.
guy, like don't be this guy.
Yeah.
You know, values voters got to listen to an earful of Ted Cruz over.
Lucky them.
Yeah,
they liked it apparently because he
loved
won the straw poll.
He got heckled mercilessly, though, throughout the event. He kept making comments like, that this was the president's paid political operatives were in the room. And then another point said, is anybody left at the Organizing for America headquarters? Because he was getting heckled throughout his entire appearance there.
I would actually be really laughing about this and think it was extremely funny if they didn't have the government shut down right now. You know?
Yeah,
right.
I know.
It
makes
it very, very serious because what we're really seeing, other than what they're doing to the government, we're seeing the Republican Party sort of self-destructing.
Yeah.
When an arch-conservative is getting heckled at an arch-conservative
right.
conference.
So true. Yeah.
Nobody knows what they're supposed to be thinking.
No. Everyone's confused.
Yeah.
They They had a straw poll that he won.
Yes. 42% of the vote. Second place to Dr. Ben Carson.
Like, stop it.
He's that guy who did that, like, prayer at the prayer breakfast where he, like, went on a tirade about Obama and then became sort of, like, this internet sensation. Do you remember this, like, a while back? Yeah, I mean, he sort of, like, is not... He's, like, an actual doctor. He's a doctor.
Yes, a medical doctor.
A medical doctor, Dr. Yeah. Ben Carson. Like, he's not a doctor
he's
of something
neurosurgeon.
Else.
He's a neurosurgeon.
Like, yeah.
Isn't that depressing? So, neurosurgeon's one of the things you say, like, astrophysicist to be like, well, I'm not an astrophysicist, but
right.
Like, it's like a genius profession.
Well, and yet, the doctors in politics, you know,
Rand Paul.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, not people that you
he's
would...
He's an eye doctor. I'm not trying to discount eye doctors, but I'm just saying, like, he's not a neurosurgeon.
No, he's not a neurosurgeon.
No.
Enough said. And also, the Value Voters Summit did not invite any of the people that are sort of the more moderate...
Right, Chris Christie wasn't there.
...choices for 2016, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't talk to Chris Christie. Those people are the reason he's not going
to
get elected.
Chris Christie talks to Obama, so they don't talk
right,
to Chris Christie.
Exactly. Right, exactly. It's a very complicated... situation. The social tree is, like, very hard to read for those people.
Yeah.
Another story, and this is another story that Sean kind of brought to our attention, is that the Koch brothers Koch Industries had to release a statement basically, like, disavowing themselves from the current strategy to just, like, shut down the entire government in order to defund Obamacare. They are against Obamacare. They confirm that they are not fans of Obamacare. I don't know that anyone would be surprised to hear that. But I think they've probably been getting a lot of heat for just, like, being the kind of go-to person to blame for the situation.
Well, not to mention the fact, if you're in business right now and you've ever taken a finance course of any kind, I mean, Accounting 101, you understand that we cannot go over this debt ceiling cliff. We cannot. And even the Koch brothers absolutely know that. And they're probably calling and going, you know, what's happening? You know?
Right.
Right.
Well, if there's anything the Koch brothers have done, it's probably taken a finance class.
Right.
I mean, like, clearly,
they're
made of money, basically.
That's exactly.
So, I mean, if anybody knows why this is a bad idea, it's the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
I mean,
you would hope that as the Koch brothers, they would also understand why the Affordable Care Act would actually be beneficial for business. They hadn't gotten that far in their financial education, obviously. but they definitely are sort of, like, trying to draw a line between them and the antics of the Tea Party that they fund.
Right.
And part of the problem is that they're the most kind of high-profile funders of the Tea Party and a lot of related movements. And so a lot of the time when the media is reporting on this, they'll be like, Koch brothers funded blah, blah, blah. You know, like, they call them out by name in a lot of articles that are just talking about the sort of, like, insanity on the Hill. And so I think they are sort of, like, maybe seeing their names a little too often in print related to – in direct relation to the government being shut down and are trying to operate like a business for once instead of just, like, a glorified super PAC.
Yeah.
Or maybe
I'm not respectful enough to actually call them the way their name is pronounced, Koch brothers. I often call them the Koch brothers. and when we posted on this on NPTR, I said the Koch brothers have lost control of the Cocktopus.
Yes. I love that. Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, that's really what they created.
Yeah, it is.
For some reason, they
made their bed.
Exactly. Yeah, this is their problem, if anyone's.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't disassociate the pronunciation of their name from Ed Koch. And so I have...
Well, there's too many ways to pronounce... there's only four letters. How do you have three pronunciations?
I have questions about why Coke would be the appropriate way to go with this at all. I find that so fun.
Well, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, so that's...
But speaking of... campaign finance, this is sort of this should have been higher in our order of sort of stories, but I mean there was a case that was McCutcheon versus the Federal Election Commission, and it was heard this last week, and it's sort of being considered sort of like the next Citizens United, and I mean, I think there's been a lot more talk of sort of, you know, because everything seems so sort of like in disarray, like how that ends up happening. And I think people are sort of like talking about money in politics again recently. Does it seem like you've been hearing more about that recently? I mean,
we just talked to David Cobb from Move to Amend last week.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're the organization that's actually trying to get a constitutional amendment, you know, barring, you know, all this money from being in, you know, and going for public financing of campaigns, which I think is an excellent idea.
Yeah.
And he's got a really good organization. They've got something like, I don't know, they've signed up in just 2 years, like between 300,000 and 500,000 members. And, you know, every time they've put it on the ballot you know, to do campaign finance reform. 28 times it's been on the ballot, and it's won every single time. So,
yeah.
You know, it is an uphill battle to try to, you know, overturn Citizens United and then this thing too, McCutcheon, you know.
Yeah.
It's very much of an uphill battle, but, you know, they're looking at it as sort of a, you know, 10 to 15 year process, you know, to get this thing overturned because they are winning elections.
Yeah.
So
basically what this McCutcheon case is that, and it looks like they're going to be able to overturn this from how the question or the case went when it was heard earlier this week. But right now, an individual can give $2,600 to a candidate, like directly to a candidate. There is a cap on how much money they can give sort of like to members or the party of one party. So they can give $2,600 to one candidate, $2,600 to somebody else, like $10,000 to the Republican National Committee. But it's capped at like $123,000.
Right, like in total,
like how
spending.
Much of like little bits of $2,600 or, you know, to state parties or whatever, it gets capped at $123,000. This case would remove that cap. So basically you could just give $2,600 to every single Republican candidate who's running in the country, if you had the money to do so. You could give $10,000 to every state party. You could, so...
It would allow you an aggregate, if you gave to everyone, it would allow $3.5 million per donor.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Which, yeah, it would change the election financing situation drastically because it would essentially allow you almost unlimited donations as an individual to... you know, whatever sort of political office you were looking at.
And even Citizens United didn't allow that. Citizens United was more about, you know, the PACs and the software.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. And whether corporations could give and, I mean, right, exactly, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So this, if our electoral system wasn't already in total disarray.
It could potentially be more soon.
Disarray.
Yeah.
So well,
we've got some California news.
Yeah.
Some local news.
Some depressing local news. Well, first of all, we have a weird story that is... would have been an end story for us, except that it sort of is relevant to something that happened in California this week, where there was
ahead.
A bunch of gun groups are trying to rename the day that the Newtown massacre happened Guns Save Lives Day. I can't even say that without hating
it's
myself.
Total newspeak. I mean, that's right out of
totally.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, it's just like sort of creepy, you know, creepy kind of George Orwell style, like, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, horribleness.
Man. But
PR speak.
Yeah, totally.
Bad PR.
But yeah. Barry. But this week in California, Jerry Brown vetoed a gun safety ban. I think
it was a ban on semi-automatic rifles, like a blanket ban.
Right, and it would have been sort of like the most extreme in the country, and he vetoed it. So that was
People think that he's maybe trying to go a little moderate for the re-election. You know, for his next campaign. I don't, like, is that...
Here?
Does that work here? Is that
I don't know.
That he needs
does
to
he
do?
Have to do that?
We have all... know. We have a Democratic legislature. We have, like, people aren't voting for Republicans
veto-proof.
In majorities here.
Yeah. I mean...
So, is that a thing that he needs
I wonder if
to
he
do?
Thought maybe it wouldn't withstand a court challenge.
Maybe that's
maybe.
What it was.
I mean, because I can't imagine. He has done just about everything right. I mean, I've been so impressed with him.
Yeah, he has. Term. He signed some other gun bills. He also just signed, like, a bunch of immigration bills this week, I think, that we don't have on here to talk about. But, I mean, he really, he's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just signed this energy legislation that allows, you know, for... utilities to rebate customers for, you know, energy they generate with solar panels.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Nice.
Things like that.
Yeah.
No, he's, I hope he's not trying to moderate himself. to appeal to voters. I don't know why he would need to do that. I do feel like when he ran the last time, he did run on a more moderate platform than I expected him to. As a supporter of his presidential run in 91 or 92 or whatever
it was. Yeah, my parents were Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a Jerry Brown for president sign up in my room when I was a kid for like a decade. And finally I was like, well, he's not going to run for president again. So I just need to stop this.
Yeah.
But I hope that's not what's happening. I would love to have been in the state with the most restrictive gun laws in the country.
I know. I mean, what do you think about these gun laws? I mean, like...
Do you think that they're effective?
I'm absolutely in favor of gun control. I mean, the bottom line is that... I mean, and for all sorts of reasons. I mean, you just look at the other places in the world where they don't have as many guns in circulation, and they have far less gun crime. And the NRA has somehow managed to turn that around. You know, they start talking about, they have more knife crime. It's like...
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, gun control works. And if you're not... Even if you don't don't have gun control, you can have registration. I mean,
yeah.
A car is a deadly weapon. You have to get a license, take driver's training. You have to insure it every year.
Yeah.
You have to renew the renew the registration. Why not do something like that for guns? I mean, there's nothing unconstitutional about
that. And the thing about cars is they actually have another use. Guns really are only used to kill people.
Right. There's
a car can get you from point A to B. A gun, you're just killing someone with.
Yeah.
So it seems even more so like you. I mean, Lyle and I are sort of in favor of any sort of gun bill that anybody wants to. I mean,
all bans of governments taking away our guns, whatever.
We've been proponents of like government goons going and collecting them all from people. I mean,
We'll take.
At the very least, buybacks, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and they work. You know? We have them here. They work really well. People,
they
are. Huge. Didn't someone give like a rocket launcher?
I know, like a grenade.
Yeah, time, or grenade launcher.
Yeah, they always get like these. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, they get all sorts of crazy stuff back. But this just leads us into the most important story of the week. If you're looking for hilarious news, which is it's the 10th anniversary of the California recall election.
Yes. I know. Isn't that crazy? It doesn't seem like it was that
Gary
long
Coleman
ago.
Ran for governor.
Gary Coleman.
Everybody ran for governor.
Mary Carey, who was a porn star, ran for governor.
Ariana Huffington ran for governor.
Yes, she did. Were you here that? You were here, right? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I wasn't here yet.
Yeah, Lila didn't live here. I remember, and I had just moved here because I moved here in 2003. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I just remember just being like, this is so crazy. I mean, it was crazy, but like I had moved here like in 2000, like May of 2003, so I hadn't even been here that long. So it was sort of exciting. But I mean, it was also just like the most ridiculous time. I mean,
it was weird because, you know, I mean, Gray Davis was a Democrat. He wasn't like a horrible governor or anything like that. I don't know.
No, and he had, there were a few things that sort of really kind of like went against him.
Yeah, were you having rolling blackouts or something?
Yes, and there was,
being Enron.
Yeah,
it wasn't him. And then there was also sort of like
that situation. Vehicle
registration, I think, was what ultimately probably sent people over the
edge.
Welcome
to California.
But then, I mean, it sort of, there was the, you know, talk of a recall, and then no one really took it seriously until, like, Daryl Issa sort of, like, started bankrolling the whole thing. And then he ultimately had to drop out because he was running, and so people were sort of accusing him of just sort of, like, financing the whole thing just so he could basically take over as governor. I mean, they were, he was accused of basically buying the, you know, the governorship.
Well, I think that was his plan.
That was his plan.
It didn't work out the way he wanted because Schwarzenegger basically governed almost as a Democrat. I mean,
he really did.
Problems and things that he cut some budgets that really probably shouldn't have been cut. But, you know, he actually signed California's greenhouse gas law, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of the most, it's the strictest in the nation. You know, it's the only place that has actual cap and trade.
Yeah, it was realized that climate science was science.
Yeah, well, there's no,
so that was nice.
You can't govern California as a Republican, you know, as a far-right Republican.
Right. He was also very against Prop 8. I mean, there wasn't sort of anything he could do about it. But, I mean, you know, he wasn't terrible.
Right.
I mean,
and that's what you get from these, like, coastal Republican governors. Like, New York State gets a Republican governor now and again.
Sure.
And they're terrible because they're, you know, they sort of, in smaller ways, affect the quality of life.
Budgets.
They cut budgets. They're not supporters of unions. There's certain things that they do that are maybe not awesome. But you can't be just like a hateful, horrible person and get elected in a place in California.
No,
like,
you can't do it. Yeah.
You can only be sort of like a rich person Republican.
Yeah.
You're sort of a latter-day Rockefeller Republican.
Yeah.
We don't have those anymore. Lincoln Chafee renounced his his citizenship.
He claimed he was the last one, and he's now a Democrat.
As a Rockefeller Republican, lots of shenanigans going on in Washington these days.
Other than just the general
the actual
shutdown.
Hill shenanigans.
Yeah.
Among them, a really hilarious... There's been a lot of focus on the World War II memorial.
Monument. And you sort of brought this up earlier.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, why are they, you know, making such a big deal? They shut it down.
Right.
Open it back up.
Right.
I know.
It's so easy. So easy.
And it's so funny, too, because they had this... They went and they basically removed all the barricades, and it was, like, with Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Sarah Palin, and there was a hilarious Sarah Palin quote. Hold on, let me find it really quickly. She said, "Our vets have proven that they have not been timid, so we will not be timid in calling out any who would use our military, our vets, as pawns in a political game."
Which was what she was there doing! As she's there with, like, lock cutters, like, moving barricades for the photo op?
Oh, bless her heart. I mean, just doesn't...
Just stop yourself.
Oh, man. Anyway.
That was the high comic moment for the...
seriously.
For sure.
Oh, man.
Michelle Bachmann would believe, though, that things are as bad as we've been saying they are because She thinks the end times are coming.
Oh, man.
She's...
When I put this on here, I was like, I want to talk about this for two reasons. Because, yes. One, it's hilarious. And two, I feel like this is going to really get Sean going.
Well, she's been saying this forever. I mean, I've got a clip from her back in, like, 2006 saying this. So, you know, yeah. It's like, what else is new?
End time believers often believe the end times are coming at all times.
They believe that they are happening in their lifetime, and then somehow
it never works out.
It never seems to happen, yeah. I mean, but, I mean, she... really took it to a super crazy place because, I mean, she thinks it's because we are choosing to arm the Syrian rebels.
Yeah.
That's what she's blaming it on.
Yes.
That is the specific
sign of the end times.
Yes.
That pisses me off because, I mean, nobody's been talking about this, by the way, because the government's been shut down, but there was a story on CNN just the other day that they stopped using chemical weapons on the Syrians, but they're now using incendiary weapons. And the quote was, it's raining fire from the sky, and something like, I don't know, 80 children showed up, you know, with their skin hanging off of them from incendiary bombs.
You know what that sounds like? Sign of the end times. Oh my God.
But it's just horrible, you know, and this is what's, you know, they're sitting there in this religious bat shittery while, you know, people are burning and getting gassed.
Right.
You know, it's awful.
Yeah.
Oh God.
One thing that doesn't solve the injuries that Syrian children are facing currently is predicting the end times.
No.
That's no way to get that problem solved.
But she went to, like, a real crazy place, because not only did she say it was the end times, but, like, she was like, we should rejoice that it's the end times, because that's a lot of things that, like, sort of,
yes.
You know, her brand of Christian.
Then she started referencing fig leaves
sort of like,
and things or fig
trees.
Yeah,
and then she also spoke in Aramaic, and, I mean, it went... this is a congresswoman!
She loves an Aramaic quote when she can...
She is still working. She is... in the House of Representatives right now, this woman.
When is her term?
Oh, God. It's 2014. She's not running for re-election, apparently.
Well, the bottom line is that I think a lot of, and this is true with, you know, I mean, I could, like you said, I could go on about this for a while, but, you know, preppers, end times people, all those, you know, they are people who essentially could not prevail in the existing society. They're powerless. They're losing. And so they look at the end times as an opportunity when they're finally going to be able to get their way.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's you look at every single one of those people, every single quote. What, you know, that's essentially what's underlying. You know, is that they can't get their way, and they're just waiting for everything to burn so that they can finally, you know, take their rightful place on the right hand of God or whatever it is.
It's easier than doing something productive.
Right, exactly.
There was also an immigration rally that had some exciting arrests.
Yes, a lot of
Charlie Rangel got arrested.
Right.
That must have been sort of an
arrest that he could sort of be okay with.
Getting arrested. He's a guy who will get arrested.
He was also being investigated for some things that he probably didn't want arrested for.
Fair enough.
Right? At one point, wasn't he sort of like
he'll get arrested at a protest if that's what it takes.
Yeah, and John Lewis has been arrested.
Oh yeah,
you know, because he goes to civil rights arrests.
Yeah, he's a
back
big,
in the day.
He loves a sort of political arrest, and so does Charlie Rangel. Like those are guys that are sort of like going to Keith Ellison got arrested though.
Yeah, and Raul Grijalva did.
Who is
my parents?
That's right,
person.
Yeah,
in Arizona.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so they were real excited about that.
You know, and some other usuals.
But they were there marching. There were like 15,000 of them, I think. And they were it was in regards to the fact that the House is not doing anything about immigration, which in a sort of another I told you so story.
Yeah.
I mean,
we like to just mostly do stories where we can tell everyone that we told them so. We told everyone that the immigration reform thing was not going to happen.
That was never going to happen.
And it hasn't.
I mean, the Senate
got
it, but I mean...
Well, we knew the House was never going
to
do it.
And they're certainly not going to do it while they're having to worry about a debt ceiling and a shutdown. I mean, they may get to it at some point. It's not going to be this year. They're not going to do it.
Maybe this will be the moment that they do get... They seem to be getting to things now that they're putting off dealing with the bigger problems.
Right.
So maybe...
Well, this is a big problem, too.
They put that off as well. Yeah, exactly. So there was a big march in Washington that I think had, you know... The news reports that 15,000 people were there. Bill Ayers told us to not worry so much about what the media says are, you know, like, protester counts at these protests.
Yes.
It was a point I maybe disagreed with him on. I feel like the only thing that you have is, as a protester, is what the number of people the national press said were there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, who else... What are you getting out of it? But in any case, I'm choosing not to worry about the numbers, and I'm choosing to think that it's probably a higher number.
Yeah.
But we have an Alan West story for you.
Oh, yeah. I know. We love Alan West.
We love talking about Alan West.
By the way,
it's like
because
our favorite.
He and Michelle Bachmann are sort of our go-tos.
Yeah.
But he went off the grid for a while. He was working at Pajama Media, which nobody knows what that is.
Then got fired because he called someone a Jap.
Did you hear about this?
Oh, no.
Yes.
In the, Jewish American princess context.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. Not in the World War II context.
No. So he's got some time on his hands to be making other ridiculous comments.
That's what he's up to at the moment.
He was talking about Obama's stance on the shutdown, and he says, I can put in very basic Southern terms, he's a spoiled brat child.
Question. Brent and I are both only children, so we know about
neither
the term
of us are from
spoiled
the South,
brat.
And I have...
We all know the term spoiled brat.
Right, you don't have to be from the South.
To know... That's not a Southern term.
No.
So, but obviously he is sharing the just general misunderstanding that other Tea Partiers seem to have about what's going on right now and who's responsible.
Figures.
Projection.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and he's not getting the news now that he's not reporting it at Pajama Media anymore. So.
Yeah. Oh, God, remember that house that Mitt Romney was going to build with the car elevator?
Well, thank God it's happening.
It's happening.
I think it does still have a car elevator.
Yes.
There was an appeal to stop him because he was basically like taking over a bunch of public beach to do it.
Right.
Something like that.
But they decided who cares.
No, who cares? This is a man who can afford a car elevator. Just let him keep it.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to deprive him of his car elevator, for God's sake. So anyway, that's going to go on.
And then in final / most horrifying news of the week, more horrifying than government shutdowns.
And sinkholes.
More horrifying than sinkholes. We report on every sinkhole story that we read.
Lila's dad calls us sinkhole radio.
Yeah. We're obsessed with sinkholes.
I don't know why.
We're obsessed with sinkholes, we're obsessed with Grey's Anatomy, and we're obsessed with secessionist movements.
We talk a lot about secessionist movements.
And then periodically, we're obsessed with natural disasters, and I mean that in the natural sense, because... Remember that story from Guam that we reported where, like, they were airdropping rats to
poison
get...
Poison rats to get rid of the tree snakes that were taking over Guam.
And then of the tree snakes, there was a spider epidemic. Like, a lot was going on. It was the worst story.
You don't want to make a trip to Guam.
This is worse.
But this is worse. You've seen this, I'm assuming, probably. But have you seen this killer hornet story?
Yeah, I have. It's actually the first time I've actually been truly horrified by anything in nature. I mean, because this is something that you could actually, you know, kind of... come into contact with.
Yeah.
No, I know. I said that to Lila. When I was reading this article, I was like, I don't even really know that I want to talk about this because it's such a visceral sort of I mean, to look at some of these pictures and to hear about some of these
bullet holes.
And also it just eats flesh basically. Yeah. And also can shut down your kidneys. So you can,
you get 10
crazy.
More stings, you can basically die.
Yeah. It's killing people.
They also, this is even worse in some ways. They eat honeybee.
Yes. Oh, right. And so we're already facing a bee shortage.
Which is
That's the thing that's
bad.
Been going on.
Very bad.
I hate honeybees, too, but sure. I hate all stinging animals, but not as much as
you
I hate
some
bees.
Of them,
you
now.
Need them. As long as they're not near me, I'm happy to let them go around buzzing, doing what they do.
Yeah.
But there's a shortage of them that messes up a lot of different ecosystems.
System.
It messes up the entire ecosystem.
It's not for
exactly.
Honey, so.
Yeah.
Real problem.
So, this is just this horrible. Then there was a hoax story last week that was about how they had gotten to Nebraska.
They'd
somehow
come to Nebraska.
And it got picked up by some regular media, and so because it was not one of those it wasn't written like it was in The Onion, like it was written in a sort of serious way, and I was like, Brent, did they change planes somewhere?
I was like, fly
from China and then change planes.
I was like, there's no direct flight. I'm from the Midwest. There's no direct flights
from China to
Omaha. Yeah. You can't do it. But these hornets, though, can go 25 miles an hour.
Yeah, they're like little...
They can cover 50 miles a day.
They're faster than golf carts.
I kind of call them flying rattlesnakes because they
have
venom as rattlesnakes, and there's more than one of them, and they chase you.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the worst thing. I think 41 people or something have died.
Just within the last few months.
Yeah, right. And then thousands are injured.
Yes.
The worst thing that could happen to any society.
And I was reading an article about this one poor woman who was bitten in her legs, and she can't walk.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, because she has bullet hole-sized holes in her legs.
And eaten flesh.
She's lacking in flesh. And that is one of the things that you need to walk.
God.
It's the worst. So nature is really out to get you at this point.
And people are sort of, thinking that this at least has, some partially to do with climate change.
Yeah, well, their season has gotten...
Yeah. No pun intended. I mean, with climate change, we're going to be seeing all sorts of migration of tropical diseases and insects and animals changing their range, their...
Oh, yeah, and we're already starting to see some of those things. You're seeing sort of, sea life in places where they don't normally show up, and you're seeing, birds change their sort of migration paths or not migrating to where they normally go because where they are is getting
warm enough.
Warmer, so they don't have to go to any place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's already happening.
Yeah, what a lot of people don't understand about this is that there are any number of insect species that are killed off by the cold weather.
Right.
Their larva cannot survive the winter. And so, you know, they have to start over every year. But if when the winters get warm enough, suddenly they don't have to start over.
Right.
Their
and that's why there's
explodes.
Right. And that's why there's so many. That's why people think that there's so many of these hornets now.
Right.
Is because they're
their
so
season
they come,
came early.
They come in the, they usually live in like some of the mountain regions in China. So it gets cold enough that they die off. But now they're obviously
can
not because they're busy killing
import
people.
Import a giant freezer to China and just sort of like a no. dome style freezer. And just
no.
freeze that section of China.
Nope.
I would like to invent that.
Okay.
That's, I mean.
Do you remove all the people first?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right. You don't, well, you know, they have warm clothes.
All right,
you,
fine.
You let the people who want to leave, leave.
I see.
So
you
that
warn them.
You warn them. You're like, we're going to put a giant dome over your
home.
It's
homes. Like Under the Dome. It's like
it's
that
like
show.
Under the Dome, that show that I haven't seen yet and will never see.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a dome in some other show, too, like Once or something.
Oh, there is.
There's more dome shows than you would think. That's a thing that's happening out there on television.
All right.
Domes.
Fair enough.
It's popular at the moment.
Well, that was our final story.
Yeah. So that's the news of the week, unless anyone has any television news they need to report. Brent live texted this week's episode of Grey's Anatomy for me.
Yeah, I did. Sean, Lila and I like to talk about Grey's Anatomy because, like, we're just sort of, like, old viewers of it, and it just gets more ridiculous and to the point of, like, being unwatchable, but we continue to watch it, and then we like to share with everyone how unwatchable it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, because
we
can totally campy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, it's yeah. campy. It was really campy this week, right, because there was, like, a circus involved or
yeah, there was
a gala or something?
Yeah, there was a gala with, like, Cirque du Soleil performers, and one of them fell, so then there was, like, a medical emergency, like, at the hospital gala, so it was, like, everything just really came full circle. That's all we're going to say about that. So, thanks, Sean,
yeah,
for
thank
coming.
You so much for coming. This was so much fun. Come back sometime, please.
Yeah,
and you have, you wanted to, you've got a, your
yeah, you have guests
Kevin
coming up.
Show,
yes,
right?
Well, this week we aired the show that we recorded 2 weeks ago with Bill McKibben, and it was awesome because we caught him as he was on one of his divestment tours. He's traveling all over the country and the world getting people to divest from fossil fuels, which is awesome.
Oh.
And, you know, we talked to him while he was in the car in the middle of Kansas somewhere. We kept losing him, but he called us back, and we had about a 40-minute interview with him, and it was really great because he does talk about, you know, some of the exciting things that are happening in the divestment movement and also about his new book, which is called Oil and Honey, and he's a beekeeper.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, and because he's trying to be, you know, as resilient as he can. He lives in Vermont, and, you know, because climate change is affecting them, and, you know, so it's just a really, it was really excellent. He's a great human being.
Nice. Well, and tell everybody where they can listen to your show.
Yes, nptr.net is our website, and we are on Blog Talk Radio at National Progressive Talk Radio.
And we will post those links for you in the rundown that we post with our episode so that
you can catch
that interview on as a podcast because it'll air before this is posted. So
right.
All of our episodes are available as podcasts. They're on iTunes and Stitcher and every other place.
So nice.
All the places
yeah.
that you find these things.
Well, thank you again.
Yes.
And we will talk to you all next week.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.